Now, this man was a mad tweeter yesterday. Did not like the officials at all. He's the great number 36, Brian Westbrook. B. West, how you feeling?
Mike, I'm not very happy right now. Not happy at all. And just like you mentioned, the officials, they certainly did disappoint me yesterday.
Yeah, I get it. You know what disappointed me? 39 minutes of not scoring.
Oh, absolutely. I'm disappointed about that as well. That the officials are just a part of the disappointment. Mm-hmm. The biggest part was my football team, offensively speaking, not showing up to the game for a majority of the football game. It's been a very disappointing day for me yesterday.
Let's talk about the quarterback, okay? Because clearly, I mean, his numbers yesterday, rating 120, whatever it was, three touchdowns, no interceptions, the whole bit. And he's had a lot of numbers like that this year. But clearly, Carson Wentz does not have the same zip that he had last year. Now, is he still injured and favoring that leg? Has the league caught up to him? Is it the play calling? What do you suggest here? Because the quarterback didn't take him down until there was desperation when he came through very well in the fourth quarter. He really didn't make any plays early.
I think there's a few things going on with Carson, and I think all of it, a majority of it, stems from the injury. And so, and I know this, and you had an ACL. I've had an ACL before. When you come back from an ACL, you spend almost all of your time rehabbing, getting that muscle stronger, just getting yourself ready to be able to participate. You're not working on your game. You're not working on your fundamentals. You're spending almost all of your time, your energy, just being able to get back out there and play. That's what Carson Wentz went through. And so that jump from year to year, where you work on your game, you work on your timing with different guys, going full speed, he hasn't had a chance to do that. And so now, because of that, now you see his timing is off, his rhythm is off, his mechanics, his fundamentals, all those things have been affected, and that becomes, and now he becomes an average, maybe a little bit better than average quarterback. All those things have affected his game, and what you see during the game is that he's coming off receivers quickly and early, right at the line of scrimmage, even though sometimes they're winning. He's not doing a great job of reading defenses every single play, and then when he has guys open, it looks like he's throwing the ball late. And there's timing is just not there with his receivers at this point.
Yeah,
a lot of different things going on.
Couple really big misses early in the game. One to Goddard, absolutely, one to Golden Tate. Mm-hmm. And he made those throws last year. All right, let's talk about the head coach. First of all, let me ask you, what do you think of the 3rd-and-1 option keeper call?
Not a fan. I'm just not a fan of, you know, again, I think putting Josh Adams at the top of the eye, if you want to run the ball, and Carson Wentz under center and running him downhill and allow him to slip and find a hole, that's what you do in 3rd-and-1. The option, their linebackers are sideline to sideline type of guys. They're fast. That's what they want to do. They want to be able to run you down. That's why that play would never be in my play sheet at that particular point in the game.
They didn't have a lot of plays. Right? At one point early in the second half, the disparity was like 47-20 in offensive snaps. So I guess that's an excuse on why you don't run the ball a lot. But Josh Adams, 3 carries for 30 yards, and didn't really go back to him.
Yeah, Josh Adams was very effective. And here's the other reason why you only have a limited amount of plays. I think they ended up having 52 maybe, is you're 1 for 9 on 3rd down. If you can't stay on the field, you're not going to run enough plays. You want guys to get into a rhythm. That means Carson, that's the running backs, wide receivers. You have to stay on the field on 3rd down. The Eagles did not do a very good job of that. Conversely, the Cowboys, they were 53% of conversion rate on 3rd down. So that, there's a part there. But when you talk about Josh Adams, you know, 7 rushes, high, over 4 yards a carry, I just think that you have to give him a chance in a game where you're close. The biggest margin was 9 points. You have to continue to commit to the run. Unfortunately, Doug Peterson, I don't know that he just doesn't see it the same way as I do.
All right, let's look at the one of the key plays, which is that they kick the extra point to tie it instead of going for 2. And my theory is his defense is kind of gassed. Maybe you take a chance there. At the time, I thought the extra point was the way to go. We're about to play his explanation for it, but what did you think about that sequence there?
I thought the extra point was the way to go. I thought that at the time you tie it, and then you hopefully you get a defensive stop, which we didn't get a bunch of them, but hopefully we get a defensive stop and then try to win it that way. I didn't even consider going for 2.
Okay, I want you to – I need some help on interpreting what he's trying to explain here, because maybe I'm a dope, and I probably am, because I can't understand what he's trying to say here. Well, I want to let you hear it with fresh ears. This is Doug Peterson's explanation on why he did not go for two.
So the two-point conversion, and I got a report on this, and I can't off the top of my head think of exactly the numbers, but everything was in favor of going for one. And even that we had the discussion on the field during the penalty timeout, so to speak, to make that decision. And with Dallas having a minute and 39 seconds, I think, left with two timeouts, it changes. So had we, follow me here, two situations, go for it, go for two. Obviously, you make the two-point conversion, you're up one, right? Dallas has two timeouts and every down available to stay on the field and kick a game-winning field goal, right? Obviously, if we don't make it, chances are our game's probably over, right? We kick it, we tie. Now, Dallas still has two timeouts. Now they're not as likely to go for it on fourth down, right? There's a chance now, fourth and eight, that they say, you know what, we're going to punt the football, and we only have one timeout at the time with maybe no time left, and you're still playing for overtime. So for the decision now, the decision to go for one obviously favors us, and it gives us a better chance of winning that football game than it did for two.
Brian, I'm trying hard here, and like I like to think I'm a fairly intelligent guy with their wires are connected. I don't have any idea what he's talking about. It's me.
I just have to imagine. I think that's what he was saying. I think I understand is that if you are up by one, then they'll go for it on every fourth down because they're trying to get down into field goal range. However, if you're tied, that if it's a fourth down, they'll punt it, and then you can play for the tie. They're more than likely play for the tie instead of going for the win. I mean, the other conversely is that if you go up by one, which some people think you should have done, and they don't convert on that fourth down, then you win the game instead of having to go to overtime at all. So I don't know that I agree with the thinking, but I think that's what he was trying to get at.
To me, I don't know what the percentage. He's got the percentage guys in his ear, right? Now, if you get the penalty, you take a point off the board, you move it to the one, the chances increase exponentially for you to get the 2 points. It's more than 50%. The coin flip is 50%.
So you're saying you would have went for two?
Well, I'm just saying that you got to think like beyond. To me, if you're thinking on your feet and my defense is gassed, I might not have any choice but to go for two.
Yeah,
then leaving it to the mercy of the coin.
I can certainly see how that could possibly make sense. I'm a more traditionalist. I'm going for the one, play for the tie, and hopefully my defense gets a stop. Because here's the other thing. Either way, even if they tie the game and you're playing for overtime, your defense, if they get the ball, has to make a stop anyway. At least one way you can guarantee that you're at least get an opportunity to make a stop. Because if you don't get it on that 2-point conversion, then you won't even be able to have a chance to have a chance, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I know. It makes sense. Only the only way it doesn't make sense is if your defense is gassed and you don't have any confidence in them stopping them. And they had shown pretty much those two tackles were gassed. I mean, Bennett and Cox were gassed, and that they were the two main guys. So I don't know. I think maybe you try to steal one there and the chance, you know, if you move to the, like, not from the two, but from the one, if the statistics say that's a 65% chance of making it, then I got to trust that.
Let me ask you this, though. You remember the third and one. You just asked me about it.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that was their best play at that time.
Yeah.
They got stuck for
a
long.
Okay.
So at the same time, we're at the one, but when we were at third and one in a critical situation, we went with an option play and we didn't convert. So now I'm a little bit gun shy if I'm the head coach in a critical moment like this to actually try to go for two.
All right, that's fair. I mean, where is this season left now? Like, it's not over, but it's over. So, like, what's your conclusion?
You know, I certainly believe that, I mean, it's going to be almost impossible for them to get into the playoffs. So I'm just going to go from the position that we don't make the playoffs. I just think that this team, Carson coming back a little late, not being all the way healthy at the end of the year, at the beginning of the year, not his fault, but it just so happens that way. I think the coaching staff and whoever's picking the players have to, at that point, play towards being closer to a running team, being closer to something that you're not depending on Carson Wentz to throw the ball 35 times a game and win the game for you. Even when Carson Wentz came back and he wasn't the same guy, just because he hasn't had a chance to rehab and all the different things that I talked about earlier to make him better, that's when you have to shift the dynamics to being more of a running football team. And we never adjusted to that. Even yesterday, when you're down by 9 points at the most, we never ran the ball and we had a commitment to the run. I think that the team needed to shift it just a bit, and we didn't do that. And, you know, there's a lot of different reasons why. We had a lot of injuries throughout the season. We're beat up in the secondary by injuries now. I think that as coaching staff and as a group, we have to do a better job of rolling with the punches and adjusting to what has happened to us throughout the season.
I gotcha. Bree West, I don't know what kind of conversations are going to be from this point on. Come up with something. We can talk about something outside of sports. All right?
We got to figure out something else.
All right, man. We'll talk to you. There he is, the great Brian Westbrook.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.